Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And so they were doing like side-by-side comparisons of player by player, which was, you know, really disturbing for me because, like, you know, they'd compare us to the 67 UCLA Bruins, you know, and they'd say, well, Johnny Dawkins is better than Mike Warren, and Duke wins this one, and Mark Allery is better than Lynn Shackelford. And then they'd go, you know, Billis Alcindor.
It's tough.
Had a rough time there, yeah. You know, Billis Walton and then Billis Ewing. So it was not a good weekend for me.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All righty then, plausibly live from a still undisclosed third floor location in Chevy Chase, Maryland. We're on the air. Great fun day for me. Jason LaConfora is with us. Luke Russert is with us. Michael Kornheiser is with us. Jason's friend Danny is here. And we've just loaded him up on Kenyan women's lacrosse stuff to sell in the parking lot at Camden Yards. Nigel's going to run the board.
College, not the country.
Yeah, right. Barry's Verluga, Kenyan, not Kenya. Barry's Verluga is going to join us later. And everybody came in hats, okay, because it's opening day in Baltimore where Jason and Danny will go, and it's opening day in Washington where Luke and Michael will go. I am surrounded by people with hats. Let me get a little bit of business out of the way. And that is to wish Kevin Sheehan and his son Ryan, I think it was seven good thoughts when we were finally done.
I think after all the presses, it got up to seven good thoughts.
So we're playing them yesterday. It's me and Michael against Kevin and Ryan. Ryan is a junior at Georgetown Prep. He hits it a long way. He reminds me of you when you were a high school kid. He hits it a long way. So we're up one or two or whatever deep into the front, and Kevin says, you know, well, it's a good thing the match is only for kind words, because Kevin had the impression they were going to go down the drain. So then on the back nine, we got blitzed. Did we lose the back nine by four or five?
We lost pretty quickly on the back nine. Kevin, whenever you play with somebody and they start to say, oh yeah, my son's like a 12 or a 14, when they're giving you a range, you know that they're going to take the higher amount of strokes.
Yeah.
And the kid's actually better.
He's
than
on the high school
previewed.
Golf team at Georgetown Prep. He's not
very
a 14.
Good program, by the way.
And Kevin announced he was a 16, which is a joke. I mean, Kevin is much closer to a 12 than a 16. Don't you think?
Yeah, Kevin hits a great golf ball. He drives it well. He has a short backswing, really powerful through swing.
Like a hockey player. Yeah, it's like a hockey player.
He birdied 12 to win the hole. He's making par putts.
Yeah, so you know, so we hate him, and he killed us. I'm an 18 working on a 21.
These words quickly moved away from being kind.
Yeah, they're not kind. So kind words to Kevin, and mostly to Ryan, not to Kevin. It is opening day. I'll get to opening day. I do want to mention one of the stories yesterday was South Carolina beating Mississippi State for the third time this year and for, I believe, the 12th straight time overall in the women's college finals. And we watched a little of it.
We watched
without,
20 minutes.
Without any particular passion for it, we watched a little bit of it. I don't know, Jason, I don't know how you feel. I don't know if you watch women's, but I usually, if UConn was in it, I'd have watched it. And I'd have watched it more intently because I really like UConn. I can't believe they lost.
Yeah.
You know, they lost.
I'm not going to lie and say I wouldn't have watched it under any circumstances, probably. Right. But I did watch the final 10 minutes of the Mississippi State game and was like, wow, they're going to do this.
Beating
like,
UConn.
They keep making these shots. Like, this is going to happen.
I mean, beating UConn is a big deal.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, it was a 111-game streak they had going.
And it was on basically it was on in the middle of the night.
That's when you're back in your day, Tony. I mean, that was like what Notre Dame upset UCLA.
Yeah, I mean, women's college.
Three or four seasons of
results. Don't get me to where I'm going to say it's the same thing. Same thing. But beating UConn is a real big deal. And so for me, it diminished a little bit. Did it diminish the final for you?
I just think we're looking at the result from the previous day as being the real story.
Yeah, that's right. What I would think.
I mean,
too.
Somebody tweeted that now Mississippi State has to go out and beat the Finns. Yeah,
right,
the Finland. And I thought that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, right. 1980.
People
forget
about that. When the U.S. beat Russia, they still had to beat Finland for the gold medal. It's the same thing.
So it's really great for Dawn Staley, who played college basketball at Virginia and who's going to be the Olympic coach. So it's a great way to get into being the Olympics. So, I mean, nice things I just wanted to mention.
Think they put a graphic up during that game that said, like, it was only the sixth time that the game had been within double digits.
Oh, for UConn?
For UConn. Yeah, like 111 games and like 103 of them were by more than 10 points. Like, but what?
Gino also.
Last year in the tournament, UConn beat Mississippi State by 60.
60. Yeah. I thought.
By 60.
In the tournament,
not like regular season.
Like, I obviously don't watch women's basketball. When I heard 60, I went back on the DVR because I'm like, was that 60 or 16? And then, like, I listened to it three times. I'm like, no, 6-0.
Like, 93, that happened. 33, something like
that. Gino, what? Though, looked, I thought, fairly relaxed after the result. It was almost like, I'm happy this is over. I'm happy we can start it up again. It's easier to coach people when we have the redemption narrative, as we see with UNC this year.
Yeah, yeah, which we will obviously get to. But let's go to opening day. You're going to the Baltimore opening day.
Camden George Horn with my boy Peanut from our beauties.
Boots.
Do you like them to be?
I'm bullish
they're
on
in
the
a
O's.
Tough division because the Red Sox got a lot better. They got a lot
they did.
Better.
They did.
Toronto's pretty good.
I feel
the
like,
Yankees are going to be better.
Yeah. I think three teams from the East get in the playoffs again. It really wouldn't surprise me. The more I look at the other divisions, I'm like, you know, I think Houston will be good, but who else out west? You know, somebody's winning the Central. I think it'll be Cleveland, but it might be a walk away. You know, I don't think Detroit is what they were the last few years, nor Kansas City. So I think I picked the O's for 88 wins last year. I think they could win 90 games. I mean, maybe I'm crazy, but I think the lineup's even better. I think they have a chip on their shoulder, and I think the starting pitching will be better. And I actually think the farm system, which is much maligned, will actually bear a little bit of fruit this year.
The catcher for years for the O's, Matt Wieters, has moved over here to the Nats. Big loss, not loss, what?
I was ready to move on from him, especially after paying him $16 million last year when he signed a qualifying offer, you know, coming off a rotator cuff surgery. And he kind of is what he is. He's a power-hitting, switch-hitting catcher. So that inherently has some value. He's a smart guy. He calls a pretty good game. I don't think his arm is quite what it used to be. I thought his defense was slipping a little bit. There's some tread on those tires.
Yeah.
But they've got the Orioles' number one prospect is this kid Chance Sisko, who could hit in the majors right now. He's got to beef up defensively. But that transition was coming. And the guy they signed, Wellington Castillo, I think he's going to have a big year.
Here's the question I have, and we'll get to the Nats right after this, but it's sort of a Nats-oriented question. You worked at the Washington Post for a lot of years.
10 years.
You know, the Baltimore Orioles, in the absence of a team in Washington, were everybody's favorite team in Washington. Everybody went to First Memorial Stadium, which was a tougher drive, and then Camden Yards, which is an easy drive, to go to a beautiful ballpark where everybody was treated well.
It's the best ballpark.
It is stunning to me in the mid to late season to see 15 to 18.
Astonishing.
Thousand. How does that happen?
I don't know. We've debated it a lot on our podcast. We've talked to John Angelos, you know, one of the owners, about it. We've talked to marketing experts about it. I don't think the team markets its player. There's no personality other than Adam Jones that anybody really knows about on the entire team. They put a couple billboards up.
No,
I mean, Manny's not a great quote, and they don't put him out there a whole lot. And all they do is put the same billboards and the same overpasses that they've done for 30 years.
Ocean City.
And that's it. Yeah, I mean, like, so they don't really try in that regard.
Jason,
and
that park was full. It was full all the time.
It's
full all the time.
Yeah, but so is Cleveland. I mean, those stadiums when they opened were such jewels that everybody went, and it was the hip thing to do. And both those teams were so good in the 90s, and you have this drop-off in the 2000s. But
Cleveland, I was just in Cleveland doing an event. They told me that they're up over a million over this time last year, just in terms of
good
between all the partial plans when you add them up.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's the case in Baltimore. I don't believe that's the case.
It's odd to me because it's
no, they're playing September games that matter, and there's nobody there. It's scary.
All right, Michael and Luke, you're going to go to opening day here. Luke has trimmed his beard. He's taken his beard off. He now has a mustache. Luke actually looks like he could be the closer.
Yeah.
Luke walked in
here. I might be.
Yeah.
I'm intimidated.
This
was intimidated.
Espinoza from
in.
3 years ago spring training mustache.
You compared me to Espinoza. I was trying to go with the Dennis Eckersley.
I was going to say, there's some Wally Backman, maybe.
Yeah, I like that one. Well, Tony, I think the first thing we have to get out of the way is that from now through October, you will fall asleep to the angelic voices of F.P.
Santangelo
and Bob. See you later, Carpenter.
And the Vuvuzela sounds coming out of your TV.
That's going to be great for you.
Yeah.
But I'm cautiously optimistic about the Nats this year. I do think the division has gotten better than last year. We won't have the Mets injured again, so they're going to be a tough out for us.
Well, wait. Mats can't pitch for a while, and you don't know about Harvey.
Harvey's fastball's down for at least another month.
Yeah.
I just think that they'll be better towards the end of the season. For us, though, it's this, and Michael and I were talking about this, it's the same story since the Nats got good in 2012. Can the bullpen hold up in October? I'm not optimistic about it because I've seen the movie too many times. I've seen the meltdown too many times, and there is not a name in that bullpen that I can wake up in the morning and say, hey, forget about putting my life on the line or the season on the line. I'm not even going to put like a $10 bet on the line on anybody in that bullpen right now.
I'm a little more optimistic. I really like the idea of Glover, Kelly, and even getting to Trinan to close out these games. I think their starting pitching is stronger than we think based on these, you know, all-star pitching lineups they've had the last
Rourke
couple of years.
Rourke is very good.
I think the bottom of their starting lineup is trending up, which is going to help them win those third, fourth games in these series, particularly in that tough June stretch. I'm really looking to that late June Met series because I think these teams are going to be neck and neck for the entire season. I think both end up getting into the playoffs. I'm more interested to see if the bats finally wake up for a longer, more sustained period of time. I look at some of the small additions that are, you know, the re-signings for pinch hitters and even somebody like
Lind.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that that gives them some more offensive surge, even just the shift to putting Jason Worth deeper into the lineup where he can still be a very effective professional hitter who works a count and tries to take out that starting pitcher one inning earlier than otherwise.
So you're not, are either of you worried, and this goes deep into the weeds, are either of you worried that Jason Worth and Ryan Zimmerman are, they've gone over
declining
the top.
We've talked about Jason Worth declining, I feel like, for the last 3 years, and he's a vegan.
Well.
I mean, the vegan crazy diet and the flexibility, whatever he's on, the herbal medication, good for him. Keep it up, because he's Benjamin Button. I mean, he's aging in reverse at the end of this contract. I never thought in a million years that paying him, what, he's going to get to $21 million this year in his last year of that insane
Never thought
deal.
He'd be on the team.
Not only did I think he'd be on the team, I didn't think he'd come close to being worth it, even if he was. And he is. I mean, that's pretty market rate for someone like him.
I'm definitely more worried about Zimmerman just for the amount of time off that he's had over the last couple of years. But I think they've figured out, hopefully, a system where you put in a power lefty coming in off the bench who can definitely make up for that. And Jason Worth, I don't even care about the walk-offs unless we get another memorable quote with Dan Coco.
Yeah.
I care about those six, seven.
Coco, right?
Coco, yeah. Six, seven, eight, nine
tomato
pitch at bats.
Adam Eaton, though, is the guy we haven't talked about. If he is just the mean, I mean, if he averages what he has done his entire career, that is a significant upgrade for Washington. And he also is a guy, from my watching him, we don't like to have the term clutch, but he seems to always come through when it matters. He doesn't have a lot of those strikeouts with a runner on second in a tie game where you're trying to swing for the fences with an uppercut. I'm looking at you, utility guy in Anaheim right now.
It's good. It's good that you have no opinions on this. It always makes me happy.
Oh, yeah.
It always makes me happy. So you think, now they've done this, Michael, what you're describing with the bullpen is what Kansas City did.
I think that's
the
model.
With very defined roles.
No, we do. It's almost too traditional at times. I feel like Buck is so sort of married to certain ideas. Again, you know, something happened in Toronto that things got off the rails there at the end of last season. But generally, yeah, I mean, if they line up in a perfect world, you've got Givens, you've got Brock, you've got O'Day, you've got Britton. That's the
so
A team.
This is the most interesting thing to me about Rob Manfred. Rob Manfred doesn't want this. Rob Manfred doesn't want relievers to come in. He thinks there should be a penalty or a rule against that you should be able to limit relievers. To me, that speaks to the heart of your scouting, your strategy, your managing. How am I going to win the pennant? If I've got three guys that throw 101, you're telling me I can't put them in because you think the game is going a little bit too long. That, to me, is utterly crazy.
No, you can't start messing with team composition. Like, you're allowed to build your team however you build your team.
I don't understand that. Do you understand that notion?
I don't, and I also think that all this concern about baseball being too slow is really overblown. I was at the game of the famous seventh inning that took about an hour and, should I say, 3 weeks to play that seventh inning in Game 5 of the Nats-Dodgers. And when I was there, I didn't even notice it being that long because I thought it was so intense. Baseball has got to the point where it's a hyper-local sport. You have people in individual markets that care about it deeply. They're going to watch no matter what. The game of the week, That era is dead. It's not coming back. It's not coming back.
It's not a national game.
It's not. It is a regional game, similar to what hockey has been, but on a higher level. And it's great.
The owners would tell you the money is in the regional network. Correct. All the money is in the regional cable packages. That's right. It.
And the beer. I mean, that's it.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get out of here. When we come back, Barry Zwilluga will join us. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Upside ad. It's Tony Kornheiser, and I found the best way for you to buy travel. It's Upside.com. Here's why I love them, why I tell people about them, why other people love them. At Upside, you save money on travel and you get a free Amazon gift card worth $100, $200, even $300 every time. You get savings and a big gift card free. Here's how they do it. Upside bundles your flights and hotel together for one low price. Bundling saves a ton of money, especially on business travel. So they give you an Amazon gift card. Your company saves money. You still keep all your miles. And right now, when you use my name, Tony, you are guaranteed a free $200 Amazon gift card your first time. My name, Tony, gets you a guaranteed $200 Amazon gift card. How can you not do that? Upside, save big on travel. Get a big gift card every time. Upside.com. That is Upside.com. Minimum purchase applies. See the site for details.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
Caldwell Gray sent this in. His band is called Craven Dogs. The song is called Hoyt Wilhelm. It's fantastic. There's a song called Hoyt Wilhelm in honor of opening day. The new album, Bone, will be, as he says, unearthed on May 13th at Villain and Saint. I'm old enough to remember Hoyt Wilhelm pitching for the Orioles and the Giants, at least. Jason, do you remember Hoyt Wilhelm at all? You're
not
too young.
Actually seeing him, but I know of him like forever.
He is credited.
Knuckleballer, right?
Yes, he's credited with being like the first great relief pitcher. That's what he did. Barry Zwilluga joins us now. Also too young to remember Hoyt Wilhelm, so we will stick to questions about the soon-to-be deported Blake Treinen. Not departed, but deported. So I'm going to take advantage of something here because, Barry, you wrote, I know you're going to be at opening day and you'll be at opening day with the Nats, and Jason will be at opening day with the Orioles. And I'm going to take advantage of a column you wrote, and it seemed to describe the reasons that the Nats wanted Matt Wieters in it. And they had to do with developing, as he had developed Zach Britton, I guess, for the Orioles, because you were there for that, Jason. They want him to develop Blake Treinen for the Nats. Can you just talk about that, Barry, and the theory behind it?
Well, I don't want to put the cart before the horse. I mean, it's actually kind of an ancillary story to, you know, that might benefit the Nationals if Wieters can help in the way he helped with Zach Britton. However, there is a definite parallel. Zach Britton with the Orioles was a tried and failed starter with good stuff. This is what happens in the majors quite a bit. Stuff doesn't always play, and guys can't pitch effectively with three or four pitches, can't pitch deep into games, and they end up being moved to the bullpen because their talent is still there, and a team is still trying to harness it and get some value out of it in some way. That's not unlike Blake Treinen's situation. He was a starter when the Nationals traded for him with the Oakland Athletics. He was a starter in the minor leagues. They brought him up and moved him to the bullpen. That was an adjustment. The similarity is that they are both hard-throwing sinker ballers, and they can rely. Their sinker is so potentially so good that they can rely in a relief role almost on one pitch alone. Zach Britton last year saved all 47 of his opportunities, had an ERA of about a half. Could have been in the Cy Young mix had people valued relief pitching a little bit more. Was clearly, over the last couple of years, has been about the best reliever in the game, and he throws about 90% sinkers. So he's relying on that two-seam fastball. That is Blake Treinen's best pitch, And the guy who was had the front row seat to developing Britain into what it is today is Matt Wieters, was the Orioles catcher, and for at least a year will be Nationals' primary catcher. So I don't want to say that the Nationals went out and pursued Wieters. Wieters really kind of fell into their lap at the last minute because of Trinan. But it is, as I said, an ancillary benefit and somebody who has been there before.
Jason, you watched that happen in Baltimore. Is Wieters, does he have a reputation as somebody who's calming, somebody who's nurturing? Just thought he was an offensive guy. And can you see that?
No, I mean, Buck Showalter always spoke of him in glowing terms as a future manager. If you did any, you know, at the beginning of the year, they do these sort of anonymous polls with players. Hey, who in this dugout do you think will eventually be a manager? All of his peers say Wieters. Definitely a calming influence. Nothing seems to rattle him. You know, the Britain thing, though, I mean, Barry brings it up, and it's still a bit of a sore subject for some O's fans because Brian Mattis and Britain, all these guys were supposed to be top-end starters, and the problem is starting pitching because, you know, Mattis became a loogie, a lefty specialist, and now he's out of the league, and Britain's a great closer, but, wow, it'd be awesome if we got 200 innings out of him a year, you know, instead of 67 or whatever. But, yeah, I think Wieters probably helped bring Britain along in so much as what Barry spoke about. You can be a one-trick pony when your one trick is akin to Mariano Rivera's cutter.
Well, yeah, but the problem for those of us who have watched Blake Treinen over the years is that great sinker ends up 410 feet away in the outfield, you know, in the stands. How long?
Hitting the bull.
How
right?
long,
bull
Barry? Down, the bull. How long? What's the over-under on Treinen as the closer?
Well, I mean, there are situations where, you know, if they entered the ninth with a 3-2 inning, 3-2 lead today against Miami, and Treinen gives up a 2-run bomb and they lose 4-3, if that was a closer in another situation, you know, you kind of move on to the next day.
Like Melanson yesterday. Melanson, which
exactly.
gave
you
us great joy in our house since Melanson spurned the money and then lost the game for the Giants.
But I think that, you know, on an opening day like today where the closer is new, each save opportunity is going to mean more. And one thing that Wieters told me was you don't know how you're going to navigate that territory until you've navigated it. So to me, the first, pick a number, 8, 10, 12 opportunities that this guy has, and I'm not talking about these kind of backdoor saves where it's 5-2 and you walk the leadoff guy and it's not that big of a deal. I'm talking about the 3-2 game, the game that the rest of the team feels like it is grinded out to hand the ball to the guy who's supposed to shut the door. Those situations, the first 10 or so, are going to be major because this was not necessarily an obvious choice. Coda Glover has excellent stuff and, I mean, invariably is described as having whatever the X factor, if you believe in it or not, the kind of attitude that a closer is supposed to have, which is somewhere between cocky and confident. You know, there are people who would be waiting in the wings. This is a big year for the Nationals. They are not playing for second place. That position needs to be solidified early.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think people will look at him more than anybody else on the team. I think they'll look at the center fielder second most. Jason in Baltimore, and I don't know how this works, because it's not like anybody's saying that Buck Showalter isn't a wonderful manager, and it's not like anybody's saying we ought to get rid of Buck Showalter.
No.
But not putting Britain in that
Dude,
game.
I mean, that's the first. As you're asking this initial question, I'm like, we're burying the lead here from a Baltimore perspective.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm.
He didn't pitch in Toronto in the last game of the season, despite having conservatively five, like, telltale opportunities to just go in there and do your thing.
And that is still put on top of Buck, right? I mean, he can't.
Absolutely, positively.
1,000%.
And Dylan, no one talks about Dylan Bundy never got in that game. I mean, it wasn't just Britain. It was, like, of all people, Ubaldo. Like, on short rest, out of the pen.
And he's a starter.
Dude, and Ubaldo's a guy who, like, when he's starting, has, like, an 8-hour pregame routine to get himself mentally ready to throw balls into, you know, the other team's dugout because he's a little wild himself.
But you were there, right? You were at that game.
I was there that night, and, I mean, it's – I don't want to exaggerate, but when Ubaldo enters and Edwin Encarnacion is walking to the plate, it's pretty easy to write from the top right there. I mean, you start and said Edwin Encarnacion hit a titanic blast over Ubaldo Jimenez, who was inexplicably in the game over Zach Britton. I mean, it just kind of flowed from there. It was amazing.
So this is what I'm getting at. I mean, because what
it's
do you
still a fresh wound?
Yeah, what happens? He's Buck Showalter. People will say he's a Hall of Fame manager.
In Buck, we trust.
Is he on the clock somehow?
I think he. It's weird in Baltimore because Harbaugh has won a Super Bowl, and the knives are always out for Harbaugh.
Really?
But yes, Buck. They haven't won. You know, the most wins in the American League in 5 years,
Without winning
in the postseason. I mean, right. They won 3-game sweep over the Tigers. I think people now are going to – it's not going to be Buck's always right anymore. It's just not going to be for me.
Isn't there this love for Buck because the Orioles were so bad for so long?
Yes.
He came in there and basically with a bag of potatoes made them competitive till the end of September.
Yes.
In the beginning. And now he has Adam Jones and Mercado and everybody. Yeah.
But I would also say, Jason, that, you know, it's in baseball, unlike football – you know, there can be a massive disparity in payroll in the same division. And I think Buck annually gets some credit for taking, not that the Orioles have been cheap because they've paid for Davis. They've re-signed Jones. But they're not playing in the same Yankee Red Sox territory above the luxury tax. So they don't have, they're not going out and buying David Price and trading for Chris Sale.
Right.
They're trying to get, find more of a bargain situation, develop their own, which they may have done with Gausman. I think it's a big year for him to show that he's truly a frontline starter. It'd be the first guy they really developed into that in a long time, unless you count Tillman, who's hurt. I do think that Buck gets credit for the more with less kind of equation.
I agree completely. And his genius has been in handling a bullpen that wasn't always great, and now it is truly elite. But this
Correct.
Was so egregious.
It was.
I mean, this was – and there were 5 legitimate chances to go to that guy who had just gutted it out for you all season. And just think of it from his perspective. Like, I think he was the team MVP and maybe the league MVP, and the season is literally on the line, and he's not asking you to do what you don't do. It would just be a normal Zach Britton situation, and he never goes to you, and then he goes to your fifth starter instead of you.
Does this hang over the team until they go to the playoffs? They have to conceivably go back to the playoffs before this dissipates.
I mean, maybe I'm listening to my buddy Peanut Narbutus, but I think they are going back, man. I think we're going to be talking in 6 months about a parade in Baltimore, Horn.
All right, let me go back to something, because Barry, you're going to go opening day.
I'm actually on a flight to Augusta today, but I will be thinking about it.
All right, so then, but you can at least help me with this, because you know I would ask you this. Why Strasburg? Why Strasburg? Just tell me.
Well, okay, so where would you go? I mean, just throw it. You would have lined up Roark for this.
I think I would have gone to Roark coming out of the World Baseball deal. And just because he seems a little bit, if there is such a term as flappable, he seems less flappable than. And I don't want to see Strasburg. It's like, you know, when Tiger tees it up and by the third hole he's grabbing his back. I just don't want to see Strasburg on opening day looking at his shoulder and walking off the rubber. I just don't,
go,
rubbing
it a little bit.
I don't want to see that, Barry.
Okay, so you are not the franchise that granted this guy, and we could debate this, and we should debate it, and we will debate it, a 7-year, $175 million extension, the first year, the first day of which is today.
Yes.
Again, you would not have done that. They did that. If you did that, you cannot say, you know what, this guy is so fragile, I kind of feel like maybe we'll bury him in the third or fourth game of the year. Now, the check is still going to have the same number of zeros. You are paying this guy to be the high end of what he can be. You're paying him to be the guy that was 14-0 to start the season next year. I'm not predicting that. I'm just saying you can't. They put the money in. They said, we believe in you. He's got the highest end stuff, arguably with Scherzer in the mix, obviously, but the highest end stuff almost in the league. And you can't just say, well, you know, you're too flappable. So we'll go with Roark. I just okay. think it's they've said you're the guy. Here's your, you know, it's for him. If he has 30 starts, the numbers will be there, because to have 30 starts, he'll be healthy, and when he's healthy, he's
very good,
just about as good as it gets.
But you think he's fragile? No, I can tell that.
That's why I call him the orchid.
But Tony, we don't have to deal with Danny Espinosa this year.
That's right.
So we will all sleep a lot better.
Barry, give my best to Spander and Kindred and Junior and who else is in that house?
Boz.
And Boz. And enjoy that. Just quickly going out, Gonzaga, UNC, who you got?
I got Carolina, because I believe if I had them from the start, I believe
you'll win.
Nigel will win. They win.
That's right.
But if you don't win, you lose to Phil's mom.
Yeah.
We all do.
I kind of want Phil's mom, even though I'd love
Phil's
to win.
Phil's mom.
I've got to have Phil's mom win.
All right.
I think I'd rather have Phil's mom. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Barry. Talk to you soon.
Appreciate it.
Barry Zwerluga, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back with news. Nigel will do that. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is very 60s. This is a song called One More Chance. It's sent to us by Eric Butler in Oakland, Illinois, who says, for years, I've been hoping to create something clever and funny enough to be used as a mailbag jingle. The fact that it hasn't happened yet speaks to either my laziness or my lack of talent, I suppose. However, I may have found a loophole for getting on the show. I will ride the coattails of someone else's work and talent. Attached is a song from my older brother David's band of the mid-90s, Billy Blastoff.
How about that?
You gotta like a name like that.
Great name for a restaurant.
Hope you enjoy it. Yeah. Well, a great name for a band would be Chaz. So there we go. You have something to say before we get into news?
Before I get into the news proper, I want to say that this news report is brought to us by Pickles Pub in Baltimore. Hey, hun, let's get hammered. Yeah. And also by Timonium.
You had me at hello.
Timonium, whose slogan is also, by the way, hey, hun, let's get hammered.
Yeah.
A quick congratulations to a former cast member of the show, Jay Glassy, who is now teaching writing down at Mississippi State, Southern Mississippi State, I believe. And he won a writing award,
the
Garth Avant Endowment Award for Excellence in Fiction for Southern Mississippi's Center for Writers.
That's wonderful.
Isn't that great?
That's wonderful. Good for him.
We love Jay.
Good for him.
Yes. Love Pickles Pub, too.
That's great.
Good for NFL and MLB games.
It really is. It really is. Mr. Tony, we'll start out with some NBA. Not a great night for the Washington Wizards. They lose 139 to 115.
They gave up 139.
And 130
to the
Clippers.
They held them under 150.
They gave up two out of three games.
Do you watch this team, how they play perimeter defense?
Two out of three games, giving up 130 or more points. Wow.
They've lost three in a row. They lost at Utah as well. And by the way, at Utah, John Wall, everybody... John Wall last night, by the way, playing point guard against the other point guard in the league, Steph Curry. Steph Curry had 42 points, made 15 of 22 shots. Evidently, nobody was guarding him. John Wall had 15 points. So those of you who want to say this is the Wall Beal is the best backcourt in the world, you need to stop on that. But John Wall got a technical in Utah, his 15th technical of the year. That's Boogie Cousins territory.
Oh, yeah, he's right there.
He gets one more, he gets suspended.
Yes.
And the question is should he try? Do they carry over to the postseason?
Yes.
So in theory, he should get one
now.
The next game
to
take a meaningless last game of the season suspension, and then you start the clock again in the postseason, correct?
I don't know how it works.
I don't know if that carries over.
I know he got fined $15,000 for saying
it
bad
was
things about
a
the
really
refs.
Bad call. Though.
The officiating in that game was garbage.
It was
overall.
Terrible. Yeah, because they
you
also...
don't get 15 bad technicals. He's been fined $55,000.
Guy's got to vent a little, Tone. Come on.
Wow.
Let the man live.
Like
well, they vented again last night because apparently they were upset that the starting unit for the Warriors was still on the court at the very end of the game, despite being up by. You know, so many points.
Infinity.
And also JaVale McGee launched up a three-point shot.
So he got hit in the head,
of the game.
Right?
Yeah, so then Brandon Jennings pushed him, and then, you know, and there was lots of words after that and being like, it was completely unacceptable for the Warriors to show us up like that.
Probably.
Yeah.
That's
probably.
We'll see him in the finals. We'll see him in the finals.
Yeah.
It's all good.
That's optimism. Right.
We'll get him.
Yes. They're now, the Wizards are now fourth.
Yeah.
If they stay at fourth, they play Milwaukee. If they move up and get ahead of Toronto, I think they would play Atlanta. They're better than both of those teams. Although Milwaukee would seem to me...
They scare me a little bit.
Yeah, that Greek freak is no joke.
Yeah. Milwaukee would be a little bit scary.
They can play.
They would. So you may want to avoid Milwaukee. You may rather have Atlanta than Milwaukee, I would think.
By the way, did you watch any of the Cavaliers' double overtime win against the Pacers?
No.
Okay. It was a thrilling win. It was a thrilling. I just didn't know if you'd watched any of it.
No. LeBron is back.
Yeah, but he had words with one of his teammates, and it sort of was a little bit of a kerfuffle towards the end of, I think, second
LeBron
overtime.
Did?
Yes. And then he immediately apologized afterwards. He's like, I've got to keep my head.
Isn't this entirely predictable, though? This is what LeBron seems to do every year. He creates a mental hurdle that everybody must overcome.
Yes.
And he starts, unfollowing the team on Twitter. He doesn't talk to Kevin Love. He makes fun of him. This is Jordan-esque, right? Like Jordan going up to Ron Harper and being like, don't lose us the title. I mean, this is what he does. So I don't think Cleveland in turmoil is a real storyline. I think that is created by the networks to get some eyeballs and LeBron to beef up his us against the world narrative.
And I'm complicit in this conspiracy.
We are.
Well, if Tyronn Lue had not been the coach in residence when they won last year, he'd have been fired within the last couple of weeks. Because that's what they did with David Black.
Yeah, they ran him out of there.
They would fire
him. Well, there's a great moment as LeBron is having words with his teammate. Tyronn Lue comes up and he just waves him off.
No,
he just... I thought of you immediately. It's like, well, it's because he's not really the coach.
He's not the coach. Yes. There's no general manager. There's no coach. LeBron is all of those things. And Luke is 100% right that LeBron, much like Michael Jordan, creates circumstances where he can then say, I must fight through this particular circumstance. I must lead
the
team.
Knight. I'm the knight.
Yes, I'm it. I'm Sir Galahad.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah,
so has to do it.
Lots of Galahads in hockey for the Washington Capitals. They beat Columbus 3-2 to increase the point total to the best in the league now with 112 points. Above Pittsburgh by 5 points. So the Caps really playing great hockey right now as they head into the playoffs.
Yeah. Okay.
Talk to me in May.
Yeah. Okay.
April. How about,
As a Caps hater, I mean, I hope they do well, but they're just very easy to hate on.
Those are difficult statements.
I thought it was the fans.
Well, I don't like the fans because they're not nice to the Wizards fans. I don't like, and they're all from Fairfax County, like Gainesville and Springfield and Manassas.
So great! This is why we get the mail.
We got Leesburg.
Leesburg. I
mean, Nothing good happens in Gainesville.
No, it doesn't.
Ever.
When you come into my city, please know how to drive. Yes, I know it's a big deal that there are stoplights and there's traffic. You know, they freak out. They panic. I can't get into the Verizon Center. But this division setup is very unfair with Columbus, Pittsburgh, and them, and they're going to have to face one of them in the first round or second round. So if they tank this year, I won't hold it. I give them an excuse.
What else do you have?
Georgetown bringing in Patrick Ewing.
We need to talk about this.
To interview for the head coaching position.
We need to talk about
later
this.
Today.
Patrick Ewing has said a number of times that it is his goal to be an NBA head coach. I don't know if or when that's ever going to happen. Georgetown, I would have thought, would have been closer to naming somebody already, but obviously not. And I have no idea what they're going to try to do. But I will say this, and I welcome all comment about it. It is stunning to me that we have not heard, that no reporter has zealously gone after Big John Thompson to find out what he thinks about this. Because the coach, look, you cannot take this job if you think that you don't run the program, if you think that large John Thompson, who made that program from nothing and to whom all is owed for that, if you think that he's going to be the preeminent presence in that program, it's very hard to take that job unless you played for him or know him very, very well. We don't to this moment have any idea what he's thinking or what, if anything, he has said to anyone. And there haven't been dogged reporters. Like, Jason, if you were still on staff and they assigned this to you, what would you be
doing? I'm just thinking, like, George Solomon. Like, this would not have happened. Like, someone would have been on the dude's step with a recorder 24 hours a day waiting for him to, like, get his newspaper or whatever.
And at the very least, even if you agreed not to quote him, he would have told you what he was thinking. You would have a sense of where
this
was.
There'd be a portal into his mind, yeah.
You just don't know this now. You have no idea what Georgetown can and can't do and what his presence is. And that, I think, will determine coaching. Don't you think?
Yeah, I struggle with this Hewing idea because I do agree with you. You need a clean break from the past. I also, when you think about what it takes to be a college coach and how much of a important component recruiting is, being in the living rooms, doing the phone calls, I don't see that for Patrick Hewing. Maybe I'm completely wrong. Maybe I'm completely wrong. It doesn't. And it's a different type of personality. I think they'd be much better served going outside the family. The guy from Rhode Island's not bad. Your interview on PTI with Tom Crean was great.
Tom Crean,
what a nice guy. I'd love to play for him.
Tom Crean said they don't want me. They're not interested in me. That's a little bit surprising.
But in terms of just watching that interview, if I was a parent, I would want my kid to play for him. I mean, he came across wonderful.
Until you found out that one of his brothers-in-law was Jim Harbaugh.
But the other one's John, so I mean, the yin and the yang.
Yeah, yes, but you also sort did pass the test, though. You were able to marry the sister. I mean, imagine that dating process.
The dad is awesome, though. Have you ever? I mean, you probably haven't.
He watched.
Yeah, dad was
a
coach. Like the dad is like the best of both. Like the zany Harbaugh and the grounded Harbaugh. It's like the best of both.
That's a future 30 for 30, by the way. That they faced each other in the Super Bowl. That was an underrated story.
Sure. Got thoughts on Georgetown?
No, I think for the stage that this program is in right now, you need to get somebody who's sort of been there, done that. I mean, I don't think you can take a leap of faith.
There's a boomlet for the guy at Mount St. Mary's who went to the NCAAs this year. I'm not even aware of
him. Who is the coach who was there forever, who was an institution? He coached me at Morgan Wooten's camp one time that was out there. There was some guy who was at Mount St. Mary's.
Was it Phelan?
Phelan, he had a record, right? He had a record of something like 400, 500.
He has 800 wins.
800 wins, yeah, that's it.
His 800 wins, Jim Phelan, with a bow tie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice man.
Coach some pros. What else you got?
Big match yesterday in the Miami Open.
Really?
Roger Federer. Yes, I think dozens were watching.
Yeah.
But the story is really the resurgence of Roger Federer. He has now beaten Rafael Nadal three times in three finals this year. He's won three tournaments. This is when everybody wrote him off. He's 35. They thought his body was breaking down. Took most of last year off.
Can I ask the obvious question, because you're a tennis guy?
Yes.
What makes you believe that Rafael Nadal is even 80% of who he was? Well, if you talk about bodies breaking down.
Well, he's making it to the finals, so I think he's playing well. Maybe he's not at the level he was, but certainly Nadal still seems to have something left in the tank, I would say.
Okay, great. What else?
There you go.
Can I say something?
Absolutely.
Can I talk about the book signing yesterday at Chad's? Because I went at the tail end of it.
Ed Henry,
his book is called 42 Faith. It's a biography of Jackie Robinson. And it was the first time we ever put a book signing at a bar. My feeling was, well, why should just – I mean, bookstores can do all the book signings they want, but why can't other people do book signings?
Sure.
And he did pretty well. He sold about 100 books, and so it was very encouraging because I think we're going to have more of these. I mean, if Windhorst – if he comes into town and wants to sell his book.
And with her book? Anne Hornaday?
Anne Hornaday, yeah. Sure.
Can we do one for Pumping Irony?
Well, that's a long time
ago. Or Bald as I Want to Be?
No, those are not really books. Those are
those are books. Those
more
are quite good.
Tony, how many rum and cokes did you sell?
I think we made some money.
There you go.
That was good. Because that's the point. At a book signing, and everybody here is familiar with book signings, they've all gone to book signings, the book company very, very often puts out 100, 200 books. The author chats for a while and then signs books that are being sold, and the book company arranges for light wine and cheese. We're going deep into wine and cheese and beer and food at a bar.
Right.
So the book signing by nature may be more satisfying for the customer to go into. So I hope that works
absolutely
out.
Absolutely. And for the author, you sign all the books there so they can't be returned.
That's exactly right.
What you got to do. And it's easier to do that if you have wine and beer around.
That's exactly what you do. So I'm happy about
that. And as a scheduling notice, no trivia tonight, right?
I wouldn't think so because we have the NCAA. So
there is no trivia.
So
no
in Old Guy, we will discuss who we think is going to win the NCAAs. Okay, so we're done with this?
That's right.
Fabulous. We will take a break and we will come to Old Guy when we return. We will involve Jason Lockenfora and Luke Russert and Michael Kornheiser. When we return, I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
So this is the MeUndies ad. Elevate your underwear game to the next level with MeUndies. You've perfected your wardrobe, but what about the stuff not everybody gets to see? You've been settling for store-bought. I'm telling you, it is very hard to say that. It's like Russell Westbrook. It's hard to say store-bought. Store-bought underwear, five bags. It's like when Bob Ryan does the PTI show and he can't say pardon. He can't say pardon.
He says, pardon.
Yeah. If you've been settling for store-bought underwear five packs, I have something that will change your life for the better. MeUndies. What's the first thing you put on, the last thing you take off? It's your underwear. Make your most important piece of clothing the best it can be with MeUndies. It's seriously soft, feel-good underpants. I love to say underpants. Delivered right to your door. They're designed in Los Angeles. They're made from sustainably sourced micromodal, a fabric three times softer than cotton. MeUndies softer than soft luxe undies come in an ever-changing selection of classic colors, bold shades, and adventurous patterns, so you can tailor your undies to your own personal style. And guess what? You can save time and money each month with a monthly subscription. I never thought of underwear in the way that I thought of, say, in the old days, TV Guide.
That you had somewhat a disposable?
Yeah. It came to your house, you know, in the mail like that. If you're not ready for a subscription, that's okay. You can still save. That's because MeUndies is offering you 20% off your first pair. Just use our special URL, MeUndies.com/TonyK, and get 20% off your first pair. Jason, on the Be More Opinionated podcast, do you do underpants ads?
We ain't got no underpants ads, Tone. We mostly got the Natty Bows. We got the Otterbein cookies. Now we got the Charleston at Waldorf. Did I say that right, Danny? Yeah. So it's a community for some of the older folks.
But well, they need underpants.
They got Cross Tavern in there. They tell me you can get beer and burger, man. I want to live there. I want to get away from my kids. Go to Charleston.
Go ahead. Revamp your underwear drawer. You deserve it. Once again, that's MeUndies.com/TonyK. MeUndies.com/TonyK.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show. Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is in honor of opening day. This is Don Henley and Boys of Summer. Now, Boys of Summer, as sung by Don Henley, of course, has absolutely nothing to do with baseball. it's about love lost in a beach in California. And that's what it's about. But because of the Roger Kahn book about the Brooklyn Dodgers of my youth, even though I was a Giants fan, not a Dodgers fan, the title is always affiliated with baseball, even though, as I said, there's a great line in this thing. I saw a Deadhead sticker on a Cadillac. You know, don't look back, you can never look back.
And so, apparently, Don Henley was driving down the freeway in San Diego when a Cadillac passed him by, and he was like, oh, look at that guy.
And I'll write a song.
And yeah, and it had the Deadhead sticker on it, and it just flashed in his head, got into the studio, and started writing the song immediately.
Which is what genius, that's how it works.
And yeah, for us millennials here, Michael and I, this was covered by a band called the Ataris in the early 2000s, and it went to number 2 on the Billboard charts. They did a hard rock version of it, which is quite good, and they believe they turned the Deadhead sticker into a Black Flag sticker.
Oh, nice. That's my wheelhouse.
That was their Black difference. Flag.
Henry
yes.
Rollins.
Yes.
Greg
Henry
Ginn.
Rollins,
now we're talking.
So the Ataris, I don't know what they're doing now, but that was a good song.
All gone, by the way, the Boys of Summer, except for Erskine and Newcomb, I believe. I think Don Newcomb is alive, and I know Carl Erskine is alive.
Right.
And I think that's it. So anyway, all right, let us use Jason's expertise as long as he's here, which makes me so happy, on all the work he does for CBS Sports, which is mostly football work. The biggest free agency deal so far in the NFL has been what?
Like, what do I think switches the balance of power?
Gilmore, the
Pats as a whole, and I don't think they're done. I think Revis could still come back there on the cheap. Jeez. They're kicking the tires on Adrian Peterson today.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll give him any money whatsoever, but if he wants to basically, you know, play for free and, you know, get some of that Bill Belichick pixie dust sprinkled on you and then try to make money somewhere else next year, he might be able to do that. But yeah, he feels very strongly about Gilmore. And at this point, they still have Malcolm Butler there too. And I think at some point they'll trade him. But if they do go into the season with both those guys, you've got two shutdown corners.
This is a question that came up last week when, for reasons, and I believe unknown to me, so I will tell you my conclusion, when Pete Carroll, unasked, volunteered that they are listening to offers on Richard Sherman, and then said of Richard Sherman, yeah, his problems this past year were mostly self-caused. And then Sherman said, I don't really want to go anywhere. But it always seemed to me, Jason, if a coach and a GM said, we're listening to offers, that meant we're getting rid of this guy. Do you think Richard Sherman will be moved off Seattle?
I think it's a tough trade to make with that contract. It's not impossible, but I don't believe the value will be there. What I think they're doing is they've had a bit of a culture there where, especially because of Marshawn Lynch, where guys kind of figured, I can, if I'm good enough, I can do whatever I want.
Yes.
And they, this is their
and
pushback.
Carroll let them.
This is a little bit of pushback on that because, you know, Sherman did go off the rails a little bit last year. And
there was that huge fight on the side.
Yeah. I mean,
criticizing the offensive coordinator, the side he doesn't play.
Yes. So, you know,
which, by the way,
I think they have to kind of rein in their hierarchy.
Right.
Yeah, their hierarchy of alpha males there.
Yeah.
And this is them letting him know that, okay, we're paying you all this money this year and you might be here this year, but then you might not be. I don't think a trade is going to come together that gives them a third, a two, something where they're like, okay, well, maybe we can get his replacement. And the fact that Earl Thomas is coming off fairly catastrophic injury, I don't think they want to mess with their back end right now. But that's their way of putting him on notice.
Kaepernick, he will get signed or he won't get signed. Here's Jason coughing.
We can cut that out of there, though.
No,
that never even happened.
It's so exciting.
Yeah, that was a very visceral cough.
You know, ambient noise, Jason coughing.
That's what I'm here for.
Kaepernick.
Yeah, I think Kaepernick gets a job. It's just a matter of when. And it may take some team coming out of the draft without a quarterback they thought they were going to get, or it may take – it happens every year. Somebody in OTA slips, falls, rips their Achilles.
Do you believe there's a political component to his situation?
Yeah, I think you'd be naive to think that doesn't play into it, especially when you're not a guy who goes in day one as the face of the franchise, but a guy who's competing to be a number two, maybe a number one, maybe a 1B. Yeah, it becomes an ownership decision. Usually the backup quarterback, the owner doesn't care in a million years. That's for my football people.
Right.
This is an ownership-level decision to bring him in your building
because you have to put your arm around him. You have to introduce him and put your arm around him.
Yeah.
What about Jay Cutler?
I don't know that Jay really wants to play. I don't know that Jay's dying to play. If you saw Jay's butt on social media the other day, I don't think he's dying to be at somebody's off-season lifting program in a week from now. So – that's another one. If somebody gets hurt and somebody's desperate and they call him in July or August, so be it. I don't think Jay is dying to get in somebody's playbook and start learning their offensive install right now.
And Tony Romo, what happens?
He has to end up in Houston. How does this not happen? They traded the stiff Osweiler, right? They basically did an NBA trade to clear out the cap space, to create the cap space and clear out the contract to now be able to assume Tony Romo. I thought it was going to happen when I was out in Phoenix last weekend. I thought Jerry Jones and Bob McNair would have a cocktail together and come out of the room and say, we did it. That hasn't happened. Instead, there's a Texas-sized game of chicken going on between these two.
What is Jones' endgame here, though? Because it seems to be rather odd because Romo was just such a good guy for
him. And they love each other.
Why can't he do a nice gesture? I mean, it's not in the same conference. Just send him across the state.
From his standpoint, he's thinking, wait a minute, somebody just paid $18 million for the hope and chance of Brock Osweiler. Somebody just gave Mike Glennon $45 million for 3 years. This guy's going in my ring of honor the moment he retires. This guy's a franchise-caliber quarterback who, when he was healthy 2 years ago, had an MVP season. Why do I have to give him away? He's already counting against my cap. We're already in cap compliance. So from he's being a little stubborn, saying, wait a minute, Brett Favre got traded for three at the end of his career. Somebody gave up two twos for Alex Smith. Last year, a 1-4 for Sam Bradford. Really, really, and this happened in this world, not a parallel universe. So I get nothing for Tony Romo? I just give him to my buddy in Houston?
You just got all this money from the Las Vegas Raiders deal.
Oh, there's never enough money. There's not enough money in the world to satisfy Jerry.
If we learn about anything with the Raiders going to Las Vegas is that Jerry Jones does run the NFL.
Follow the money.
So let's go to that. That's almost unthinkable to me. The one thing that I grew up as a sports writer believing to be true is that major leagues would stay away. What are they scared of most? In my youth, they were scared of gambling because there had been actual scandals, particularly in basketball, over a long period of time, and not just one. And they were so afraid of this that they would never, ever, ever in a million years move to Las Vegas. One thing if they let Jimmy the Greek and Pete Axthelm go on TV and slyly talk about who's favored and who's not. And it's another thing if Brent Musburger would always say, well, a lot of people got hurt by that field goal, and that was fun. But that was wink, wink, nod, nod. This is going into the den of iniquity in the United States of America. Why now?
$750 million. I mean, it's really as simple as that. I mean, the state of Nevada created a tax that they could have used on infrastructure, they could have used on bridges, they could have used on IT for the state, they could have used on schools. This is real money. Like, I think people lose track of this sometimes. This is actual money, and they're giving it to 32 billionaires. I mean, it's as simple as that. It is the sweetheart deal of all sweetheart deals. Mark Davis doesn't have to bring much cash to the table because, good for him, he doesn't have as much by these standards. He doesn't have to bring acumen to the table. Well, good, because the apple did fall from the tree here. I mean, he ain't the brightest bulb. He doesn't have to bring any development and real estate background because he has none. He can't build a Lego bridge, much less a $2 billion stadium.
You know what's so disconcerting about this, though, is it really just shows how hypocritical the NFL is. Because for all these years, it was, oh, we can't be around gambling. And then what happens? Well, DraftKings comes in, and DraftKings makes them money. So now they have official partnerships. And they do all this while still not allowing the state of New Jersey to open up Atlantic City for gambling by going to the Supreme Court and filing constant lawsuits to try and stop that. So you get $750 million free from Vegas, but you're screwing over Atlantic City that would be revitalized if they were able to have a sports book. Come on, man. It's ridiculous. All that being said, the Buffalo Bills play in Las Vegas the inaugural season in 2020, and I will be there.
Right, you'll be there.
Three-night stay minimum, right?
They got you. You got me.
That's what it is. That's money.
It's money.
Are they still afraid of gambling, or they realize that there's no point being afraid?
No, they do realize that. People make too much money. To your larger point, the only reason we're all, at the core level, at a base level, the only reason we're all, and I say sports fans, all meaning all sports fans, are this emotionally invested in is because we believe 1,000% it's real. I mean, the moment you think that result is somehow tainted, altered, or could be, it's all out the window.
But Jason, it's fair to say, regarding the NFL, there is not a chance in hell that anyone would be watching Jacksonville versus, you know, the Rams in Week 14 if it wasn't for fantasy.
Or it's fantasy football and gambling.
Or gambling. I mean, the league owes everything to gambling. Everything.
And look, I ran into Roger at the league meetings, and we started talking about gambling and Vegas and all that. Just like informally, we ran into each other at the media party. And, you know, I'm like, well, you guys play a game in London. You know, in London, you go watch a Premiership soccer game.
Everything. On site.
Bet 365. Pollard's in the stadium, and Bet365 is the official sponsor of the team. I'm like, how? Eventually, and no one's saying that they're compromised. Now, there have been cheating scandals in soccer, but not so much in the EPL. But, you know, so I'm like, you know, where does the slope go? Does it go there? And I'm not even saying it's necessarily a bad thing, but to Luke's point, when there comes a point where there's somebody in Atlantic City who can cut them in on that action, where it becomes the official casino of the NFL. But I'm saying, how does the NFL get in? How does the NFL, what's the end game for the NFL?
If you could open a sports book in Atlantic City, I would go at least once a month because that's within a 2-hour, 3-hour drive. Everyone from New York would go there, and it would completely revitalize.
But what's that doing for Jerry Jones?
That's my point, is can we get to that?
No, if there is a bridge there.
I think Chris Christie would be happy to make that
a
deal.
A golden bridge. Well, he loves bridges. He loves bridges more than Chris.
Cheers to Adam Silver for dropping the opposition from the NBA to sports gambling. I love Adam Silver for that. Smart man.
All right, go ahead.
I was going to say that I think the thing that was missed in the move to Vegas was Goodell had an opportunity to say, look, Davis, we'll let you do this if you get a real haircut, all right? We're just not going to have you have this.
Dumb and Dumber.
I think that's,
what's the character's name for Dumb and Dumber?
Christmas.
Yes, the Christmas haircut.
All right, so we have a game tonight. We have the national championship game. It is the game that CBS wanted because God help them if it was South Carolina against Oregon. Nobody would watch. Yes. It's a game CBS won. It's a game everybody wanted. Yes. It's two number ones. It's the game everybody wanted.
Jason? If it makes CBS happy, I'm happy.
Yeah, it. Who you got?
You want to hear, like, I'm not even lying. This will probably freak you out. I have not watched a second of this tournament, and this is maybe the 10th straight year. I just have like walked away from college basketball. I don't even know. Yeah, I don't know if it's on like a subconscious level, just because it's like I'm just sick of the exploitation or whatever, or I don't know. I just have lost really my stomach for it.
So then we move on.
So skip me.
No, we move to Luke.
Well, as a Jesuit educated college kid from BC, I'm pulling for the Jesuits with Gonzaga. I think it'd be a nice story. It'd be nice to have 2 years in a row of Catholic schools winning. And they are the little guys comparative to these other big programs from the, you know, when your enrollment is in the few thousands compared to these huge state schools, it is David and Goliath, even if the program is well-funded like Villanova, like Gonzaga is. All that being said, I think UNC wins. I think Roy Williams gets his third national title. He goes down in history right up there next to Dean Smith. I love the Luke May kid. That shot he hit over Kentucky was fantastic. And I think this is a old team for college basketball. Usually they're younger at these types of schools with all the one-and-done guys. This is a team. They have the redemption group text. I think they're going to be hard to beat tonight. They're a tough out. And by the way, this whole cloud of the cheating scandal that's supposedly hanging over UNC? No, it's not. I said this on Twitter over the weekend. I got some responses. That scandal doesn't bother me because I have no expectation for the NCAA and the money sports. So you have to go into this watching this tournament that we as viewers are part of the problem because we pump in the billions of dollars for this without paying the athletes, and schools are trying to get that money, and schools are going to look the other way each and every opportunity they can to put the best product they can on the court or the field. So I don't want to hear a diatribe about the cheating scandal. If UNC wins, good for them. They did it. Put it behind them. And let's just all admit, we enjoy watching unpaid athletes succeed or fail.
Michael?
In front of our very eyes.
I want Gonzaga to win just because I like the storyline of Phil's mom actually winning this entire bracket.
Absolutely.
Pool.
Everything's local.
I do roll with Phil's mom. I think UNC is going to win, even with Gonzaga's defense. I've been waiting for Justin Jackson to miss these shots. They keep going in. I'm interested to see what's going on with all of the ankle injuries for tonight's game. Bigger thing for me, I'm just tired of watching college basketball in these huge arenas where you have the elevated floor.
No. Yeah.
It's
no,
just
no, no,
hard.
No, that's not an arena. Stadiums. That's a stadium.
Football
it's
stadium.
Awful. It's
football
awful.
Stadium. Yeah. So you think UNC will win?
I think UNC is going to win.
I don't know. I've been against Gonzaga forever and ever and ever because I think they play in an inferior tournament, inferior conference, and it doesn't prepare them well for six games or at least five games because the first game they're going to win. But they've done great. Whoever's been in front of them, they've won the games. They maybe shouldn't have won against Northwestern. There was a really bad call on a goaltend. I know they shouldn't have won against West Virginia, but they did. They got better. They went to Xavier quickly. They had a scare in the second half against South Carolina. But at the end of that game, when they put the two big guys in at the same time, they dominated that game. What interested me is reading in the paper today, there's like six guys on that team who transferred in this year that are eligible this year and hadn't been there before. I was very surprised to learn that. And they're critical players on the team. Mark Few's good. He's won 82% of his games. He may not play anybody in conference, but they schedule. They go out and play people. They beat Arizona. They schedule people. They went through 37-1. I mean, they're a very, very good team. I think if they beat North Carolina, that's a real blue blood program and it's a real legitimate win. I don't think they'll do it. I mean, I think North Carolina's better, but, you know, and I'll try to stay up. But I don't think so. Isn't that start about 9:30?
9:20.
That's a late tip.
Yeah. And that's
a late
tough
tip
for kids, too.
That's a late tip on
really
Monday
late.
Night.
Especially
on
with all the
day.
Commercials. With all the commercials they
yeah,
have,
yeah, that's late. So that won't get That'll that won't get over till midnight, right?
At least.
Yeah, yeah. Midnight East. Too long for me. We will take a break. We will come back with a jingle and some email. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
How would you like to purchase a town? The town of Reduction, Pennsylvania.
I don't like the name of it.
Kicked out my neighbors and bought their home.
Got 30 minutes.
Bought sheds, my income's disposable.
19 single-family dwellings.
But something's missing, it's got me down. I'm gonna buy me a whole damn town.
Give me the sheriff.
See, I got money. Lots and lots of money. And I need more folks to fire.
You don't want them out there.
See, I got money. I'ma spare my money. So buy Reduction, bye-bye.
It's called this town stinks.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Oh, come buy lots of drinks.
At Chad, 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 Chad's.
Bill Kornheiser's links.
Nice shot, mama, mama.
Oh, got 19 new sinks.
Wine time, wine,
but
wine.
But for God's sakes, no hockey rings.
Fantastic. Kirsten Ohnstedt, that is fantastic. That's just great. It's
thank you,
it's
Kirsten.
Simply great. Thank
always
you, Kirsten.
Great.
Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thanks to Barry's Verluga of the Washington Post for coming on today. I'd also like to thank our sponsors, MeUndies and Upside.com. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. From John in Rochester, Minnesota, you got a nice shout-out from Chuck Todd on Friday's Meet
yes.
the Press Daily. When he concluded an interview with Abby Lowell, he said, "This is why Mr. Kornheiser calls you the smartest man in Washington." Chuck Todd, Abby Lowell, and Mr. Tony. That's it. That's the list. From Jenny Lee. "Hi, greetings from Starbucks Support Center in Seattle. On behalf of Chris Engskoff, president of U.S. Retail, I would like to inquire about setting up a call with Tony Kornheiser. Chris came across Tony's recent podcast when one of his team partners shared about an experience on mobile order. He would like to set up a call with Tony to learn more about it. This is Saliza.
Lace.
Oh. This is Lace. Oh, Chris, okay. Lace, Saliza. Would you please connect me to the appropriate person who could help finding a time that's convenient for Tony to have the call?
Well, so I think they should sponsor the show.
Because the
coffee we have at the undisclosed third floor location is not up to par with what they have at
Can
Starbucks.
I just say,
so we take it.
Send us a box of that?
Send us
a box of that.
With the Keurig, too.
A big box.
Big box.
From Elliot in Silver Spring, Maryland. As a second job, I'm a bouncer at a local bar, Madam's Organ Blues Bar.
Great
Anybody
bar.
Knows where this
yes.
is.
Yes, I was there this weekend. It's a great place.
I've been a bouncer for most of my adult life. I've witnessed some extremely odd things after the witching hour. While I was headed home after my shift at approximately 3:45 in the morning on March 26th, I also saw the man in the wheelchair at Adams Mill Road and Harvard Street. Given the time of day, it did seem a little odd. Admittedly, I enjoy obscure people, things, and quirks, such as counting in twos for relaxation, telling family members about license plates, uneasiness around people who wear transitional lens glasses, etc. If you told me there was a man in a wheelchair in the valley of Harvard Street in Adams Mill hurling wild turkeys at windshields to get their attention so that you could order him an Angelica's pizza, I would say that was odd. If you told me the culprit's name in the wheelchair was Do We Wear White, that would be the ah moment. This guy is there. I don't know if he'll be there today. Mike O'Brien in Revere, Massachusetts. Thank you for pulling over. I'm not going to ask you for money, and you have already sent me a beautiful used gray tie, but I just heard how you got a box of Notre Dame clothes. I would be grateful if you sent me an XL sweatshirt. We had no sweatshirts.
Yeah, sorry.
Or T-shirt, because maybe send me a large, because XL is too big, as large is too small, but XL does shrink. I'd prefer if it wasn't green, but we have green, because green makes me look fat. Maybe navy blue, because it looks better on me. I do not want white, because it will get too dirty. If you can't do that, could you order me a pizza from Angelica's to Revere? That would also help, but you could also just send me money. I'll take your response.
Another man from Massachusetts who's never been to South Bend that wants Notre Dame.
What does he think of Kenyan lacrosse? You could hook him up with that. It is navy blue.
That stuff is great. Kenya lacrosse.
It is good.
The Kenyan women's lacrosse stuff is great.
Other than the fact it says Kenyan on it.
Kenyan? Oh, because you hate Kenyan because you
went to Denison.
Yeah, so you hate Kenyan. Their rival.
Oberlin.
From Casey O'Brien in Los Angeles. The only circus I ever went to was in the mid-90s at the Target Center in Minneapolis. I was 8 years old, and a trapeze artist actually fell off the tightrope mid-routine. She broke every bone in her body.
Wow.
But she survived. It was an apt metaphor for the rest of my life. I will not miss the circus. From Bill Feeney in Cape Coral, Florida. So Saliza is in need of a nickname. How about Chunk in honor of the kid in Goonies?
Oh, I don't know about that.
How about
Salizard?
That's just mean.
From Mitch in Las Vegas. Based on the types of roles that Scarlett Johansson is now playing, I think her next role should be Adam Silver, because we don't know if he's living and breathing. From Jay Griesbauer in St. Louis. While my mother was in the hospital recently, a nurse came into her room to do a few things for her. I stepped out into the waiting room to get out of the way. There were a couple of 60-ish women sitting in the room watching television. I looked up at the TV and saw the logo in the corner of the screen. It was the Hallmark Channel. I literally laughed out loud. While they looked at me oddly, I just turned away. My mother passed away 2 days later, and what turned out to be the saddest week of my life, I had one moment of laughter because of you. Thank you. The Hallmark Channel, you gotta...
Yeah.
It was being taped in my house yesterday. I noticed the red light on the TV, and I said to the only other person who was in the room, what is that? And I was told, I'm taping the Hallmark movies.
This happened
movies.
In my house, too.
I'm taping
what?
Hallmark yes. movies.
Uh-oh.
Yes.
You cannot.
What movie?
It's the end of
or
time.
The movie.
Hallmark
the
movies.
Generic.
They're all Stacey the same. Yoder in Powhatan, Virginia. I write to stand up for those in need of an advocate. You may wonder who it is I refer to. The Owls in Danger from the Purple Line, the tragically miscast Hibachi, the unfairly treated Sean Spicer. No, the one in real need is Mr. Chris Saliza. Many days I find it hard to tell if he's even on the show, as you guys constantly keep him in the background. I would propose the following nickname, Chris Swaggy C. Saliza. Let's be honest, he'll have to work to live up to this nickname, as Nick Young is far more likely to pass than Saliza. In all seriousness, I kid because I love Saliza. Keep giving voice to all the random thoughts most of us have, but think better of saying out loud. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Yeah, we're going to go down to Roseboro and have some of that fried chicken, hon. Yeah, but you can't get no Natty Bows there, man. Not in the state of Maryland. We can't get our beers with our chickens.
you got some nerve sweeping me this way. When you said you loved me, and that was yesterday. But don't walk out now, 'cause I got something to say. I'll give you one more chance to love me like you should. I'll give you one more chance. You probably knew I would. You got a one more chance. I hope it's understood. Bring back that suitcase and put it on the floor. I won't be fooling around like I did before. So come on over here, but first lock the door. I'll give you one more chance to love me like you should. I'll give you one more chance. You probably knew I would. You've got a one more chance. I hope it's understood.